pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance.
To the band.
It may perhaps discourage you, unless your kidney, or infected with this vicious virus, that you'll be ordered to pay a fine of £75.
I'll pay now, if you don't
mind. Just make 10 louder, and make 10 be the top number, and make that a little louder.
These guys are 11.
Let's get rockin'!
Welcome to Movies That Rock, a rock and roll journey through cinema. I'm your host, Josh Fitzgerald, and back today in the co-host chair is my friend, Matt Berkey. How you doing, buddy?
Da, 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 da. Wrong show.
Da, 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 da,
da, da, da, da, da, da.
Since I can't use copyrighted material now, that's going to have to do for our purposes tonight.
That's going to take me a lot longer to cord then.
It's true. What's new and exciting in your life?
Winter is here.
It is.
Yeah.
It's getting dark at 4 o'clock.
Sunset today was at 4:36 local time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was about, I get out of work at 4:30 and there was just the tiniest little peak of sunlight left. And it was very sad because I left my house this morning in pitch black. So we're in that time of year where it's black when you leave and black when you get home.
Yeah, I keep my bike lights charged because I bicycle to work and home in the dark.
How cold is it where you are?
Let's see. I biked into work last Saturday and it was 27 degrees.
Oof. Wow. Yeah. I'm complaining about my 42 degrees, so I need to stop.
And you're probably not biking to work.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
But yeah, other than that, still kind of in a lockdown pandemic situation. So I go to work, I ride my bike, and that's about it. So the reason we picked Spinal Tap, Josh, was we originally were going to do A Mighty Wind. And that's because I assumed that as a person with a rock movie podcast, you would have done Spinal Tap as the first episode.
I know. I have been dying to do this episode for as long as I've had this podcast. I'm finally getting to it 2 years in.
Well, I never mentioned Spinal Tap as an option because I just, it's like, well, he already has done it. And then I went through your archive.
And you know what's funny is you're the first person to actually suggest doing this episode. And I think a lot of people felt that way, like, oh, he must have already done it, so I'm not gonna do it. And then when I kind of posted a little GIF picture of Spinal Tap, everybody was like, oh, you're recording a Spinal Tap episode. I didn't know you didn't do that one already. So
see,
there was a common mindset.
They were nice about it. I was irate.
Yes.
As
you should be. I'm a bit irate thinking about the fact that I am only getting to this movie now.
If I knew who to contact, I'd ask for your podcast license to be revoked.
I know. But thank you for making it happen.
And I think we got in at just the right time. Another movie podcast I like. Have you heard of my new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex?
I have. They're fantastic.
I love them. They're
amazing,
a funny bunch.
They are. Amazing group of people.
So last week we planned on recording this episode, and then I listened to the new Soup Complex, and they announced that their Spinal Tap episode is dropping this Thursday.
Yes.
So, when we were planning a time to record, it's like, we need to get this in now, so because I don't want any of their opinions to influence me.
For sure. And I don't want to steal their thunder either.
No.
Like, I wouldn't want to drop this.
I don't think we could.
No, I don't think so either. And it just would be kind of tacky if we, you know, without any kind of warning, also dropped this at the same exact time as their episode.
So if you hear any similarities, it's unintentional.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. But yeah, they're an amazing podcast. Big shout out to them. They're always tagging me, retweeting me, and, you know, bringing followers to the table. So I really appreciate you guys. And any listeners, if you don't know Superiority Complex, go and download their episode. Go and subscribe right now. So
they're a funny group. I visited Mario Del Barrio's Animal Crossing Island.
Oh yeah, excellent. How was that?
It was nice. He has some Godzilla statues here and there. He has a shared island with his family. It's very well developed. Mine's more
oh, nice.
half my island is still devoted to wilderness and weeds.
So yeah, this is Spinal Tap, a movie I'm finally about 50 episodes in, finally getting to. Better late than never. And it's a movie that really doesn't need much of an introduction, I don't think. It's an iconic piece of comedy perfection. It's funny because I adore all of the, what we now kind of collectively refer to as the Christopher Guest movies. You know, this with Waiting for Guffman and the aforementioned Mighty Wind and Best in Show, For Your Consideration, all those movies. But this one is actually one of the few that was not directed by Christopher Guest, was directed by Rob Reiner. And it was the first movie he ever made. And what a way to start a directing career.
Yeah, it's kind of filed under, or kind of started the whole mockumentary genre.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. So Rob Reiner and the three main leads filmed a short and tried to get funding that way for the band. And they had trouble finding funding. And Norman Lear was actually one of the ones who backed the project. Big 70s sitcom producer. And he has connection to Rob Reiner, also known as Meathead from All in the Family. But yeah, it starts with Rob Reiner, but not as Rob Reiner. He's Marty DeBerge.
I'll throw this out there too, since Rob Reiner, since Marty DeBerge is doing a documentary about Spinal Tap in the band, this kind of confused a lot of people when it came out, because the mockumentary genre was so brand new and there was really no precedent to a movie like this outside of, you know, maybe something like The Ruddles.
Well, yeah, and they nailed the comedy so well that easy to believe that it's an actual band, an actual documentary.
So, yeah, and since it's like 80% improv, it's so conversational and so realistic that it's easy to see where that mistake would be made.
Yeah, the problem I have with a lot of mockumentary-style TV shows today is too much winking, nodding, hamming up to the camera.
Right.
But I don't know if like a 30-minute or 22-minute mockumentary sitcom can work that dry every week to week.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. But yeah. The magic of a movie like this is because it's a standalone entity.
And you mentioned, the dialogue is improv, and Rob Reiner wanted to list the whole cast as writers.
Mm-hmm. And deservedly.
But the Writers Guild of America won't let you do that. Mm. So the writers are Rob Reiner and the three leads.
Yeah.
Harry Shearer, Michael McKean, and Christopher Guest.
Yes.
And yeah, Christopher Guest movies are some of my favorites. When people ask me what my favorite movie is, I don't know. It depends on the day and the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of just give the vague answers of I like Christopher Guest movies and I like Wes Anderson movies. So it opens with Marty DeBerge and that the USS hat he's wearing, that ship, that hat has a cameo in The Princess Bride.
No kidding.
So in the bedroom scene with Fred Savage.
Yeah.
That hat is mixed in with all the other toys and knickknacks in the bedroom.
Huh. Wow. When we get off this, I'm going to go watch that scene again and check that out.
That won't take much time. It's the beginning of the movie. But yeah, you can screenshot that for the kids.
There you go. Perfect.
So we get a roadie montage loading into New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how did you watch the film? I have the original early 2000s DVD, the special edition.
Mm-hmm. I actually purchased it on Apple TV for $4.99. You can own this movie, ladies and gentlemen, for $5.
It's not streaming anywhere. You have to purchase it.
Right.
So luckily it's one of the few DVDs I still own.
Mm-hmm.
But did you know Spinal Tap got released in the Criterion Collection?
I did. That's that's impressive.
It's out of print now, so it's hard to find and fairly expensive. But that has more than 1 hour.
Well, even when it's in print, the Criterion Collection is pretty expensive.
That's true. I bought the Criterion Godzilla box set, and I'm still buyer's remorse from.
Yeah. Even if you do like the half off Barnes and Noble sale, it's still. Exorbitantly expensive.
But I wish I had the Criterion one, because the video quality of the original DVD felt like watching a VHS.
Grainy.
Very grainy. Did you have HD or did you only pay for the SD?
I just paid for the SD and it was fine. I don't really have any complaints. But to be honest with you, a mockumentary like this, the grain almost makes it that much more immediate.
That's a good point. I guess that makes it feel more realistic 80s documentary style.
Yeah, definitely. Like if it was really cleaned up and stuff like that, it might almost take away a little bit of the magic of it.
Yeah. And then supposedly there's over 100 hours of footage. Like they can't all be funny.
No, that's true. I'm going to throw this out there too. One of the, I think, most brilliant things about this movie that doesn't get a lot of credit for being brilliant is the editing. The way this movie is assembled and the choices they make about where to end scenes, where to cut scenes and begin scenes is pitch perfect.
Yeah, and so the film had three editors, which is two more than you normally have. But when you have 100 hours of footage and you're trying to make... you're trying to get the comedic timing down of we're being funny, but we don't want people to know we're being funny.
Yes.
Like you said, just knowing when to start and stop scenes. Because when you, right. I watch some of the deleted scenes on the DVD, it's like, yeah, I know that needed to be cut. Like that's kind of funny, but it doesn't fit. The band lands in New York City and has the roadies loading up their gear. And I think it starts with the best song off the album. Mm-hmm. Tonight, I'm going to rock you tonight. The rendition we attempted earlier.
Yes. But ladies and gentlemen, did we rock you tonight?
Leave a comment in the reviews if we did.
Yes.
But yeah, the song was on one of the iterations of Guitar Hero back to video games.
Was it really?
Yeah. And it was tough. They're actually pretty decent musicians.
That was another thing that it's just incredible about this movie is they played all the music. They performed it all.
And yeah, back to editing, Christopher Guest actually demanded reshoots when the fingering was wrong on certain music scenes.
Wow.
Because he's that committed to the joke. If you have musicians watching, it's like, I'm not going to notice if the finger positions are wrong on the guitar.
Right.
But I imagine any like band watching or any competent guitar player to go, oh, he's not really playing.
Yeah. And that would take him out of it. Yeah.
Like when I see things in a movie that are my specialties and then I get taken out of it.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Yeah. So that was brilliant. And I think that's how these three guys met, Christopher Guest and Michael McKean. It like was through music. I think they were in bands and stuff.
Well,
back in like
the name Nigel Tufnel. So the band is David St. Hubbins and Nigel Tufnel are both lead guitar, which that's already going to set up conflict.
Yeah.
Because like Ace Frehley doesn't say he's lead guitar of Kiss, right?
Right.
And then Aviv Savage on the keyboards and Derek Smalls on bass. The drummer doesn't matter.
Yeah, the drummer. The recurring joke.
So Nigel Tufnel first appeared on Michael McKean's album, Lenny and the Squig Tones.
Ah, Lenny and Squiggy.
Lenny and Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley, which I always mention when I give tours of the brewery. I point to the canning line and say, this is the Laverne and Shirley part. And that's the Lucille Ball end. Right. And people older than me laugh and people my age and younger just stare at me. So yeah, I got this information from another podcast, Bizarre Albums. Lenny and the Squig Tones released an album and yeah, Christopher Guest played guitar on it, but he played it under the name Nigel Tufnel.
Oh, okay. So it's a recycled name for the movie.
Yeah, and so they used that name and David St. Hubbins and Derek Smalls when they and Rob Reiner were creating the short to try and get this movie made. But yeah, Tonight I'm Gonna Rock You Tonight is, I think it is a dynamite 80s rock song.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's ridiculous in all the ways that 80s arena rock was ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we get to one of our first interviews with the band, Marty DeBerge talking to them. So Spinal Tap started in 64, so they predate Led Zeppelin.
And the Beatles, really. I mean, if you think about like 64, when the Beatles came over, that's pretty insane.
But yeah, that's kind of a joke through the movie is they're not inventing the wave of music. They're just following the tail end.
They're just like riding the wave of music, really. Yeah. Yeah.
So they were the Originals, except there was another band called the Originals. So then they were the new originals.
The new originals.
And it's just like, to be able to come up with this kind of improv in the straight face, just such professionalism.
Unbelievable. I would never be able to do that. As I'm giggling through this podcast, I would never be able
to. No, I'm trying not to laugh.
So then they became the new originals. So that the band, the Originals, they saw that they had the new Originals, so then they changed their name.
Yeah, and then they became officially the Tamesmen, which will come up later in the band. And then the song Give Me Some Money, kind of Beatles-esque, early Beatles. Mm-hmm.
I was even thinking like maybe late 50s stylings, you know.
Right, not like I'm not thinking rock, like
Money.
Yeah, not rockabilly, but and then Marty DeBerge starts to go into the first two drummer deaths. The first one was a bizarre gardening accident. And that's just funny because the way you can imagine it, you can't, if you try to explain that further, ruins the joke.
It does, yeah. And then we had the other one who choked on vomit.
Someone else's
However,
vomit.
It was somebody else's vomit, yes.
And then the immortal line, you can't really dust for vomit.
Right. And then there's another place right there where they cut the scene right there, and it's perfect.
Yeah. And that one hurts a little because it's how many great musicians we lost to choking on vomit, because that's a normal a way to
true.
Go from overdose and or too much alcohol.
Yeah. However, somebody else's vomit is a little...
Well, that's just funny.
Oddly specific, right?
How do you get that out and prove that? So we get to the opening night party for the band, and we get Fran Drescher as Bobby Fleckman.
Yes, in a very small role, but man, she kills it.
And she's always very distinctive. I love her. I think she's hilarious.
I do too. Yeah, and then that voice.
Yeah, she's in another movie that rocks, UHF, in a meteor role.
Yes, which is actually in the pipeline.
Oh, okay.
Little shout
great.
Out. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, do you know who plays the mimes? For some reason, the waiters are mimes.
Dana Carvey.
And Billy Crystal.
And then, yes.
Mime is money.
It took me a second to realize that's who they were, because I knew that Billy Crystal had a cameo in this, and I was never able to find it, but I finally was able to identify him last night when watching this.
Okay. I always knew it was him because of that distinctive voice. Because he also pops up in The Princess Bride.
Right. Yeah. He was in everything back in the day.
Right. I'm always, we quote The Princess Bride a lot at work, and I do a lot of Fezzik and Billy Crystal quotes. The second song, so their first concert was in New York. Now they're playing in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
The second song, Big Bottoms.
This was one of the goofiest songs, I think, in the film.
It's a goofiest song from a very goofy soundtrack.
Yeah. And just how it gets like very explicit very quickly.
Right. Embarrassingly explicit.
It starts off kind of like, okay, all right, you know, with a little bit just suggestive. And then by the end of the first verse, you're like, whoa. And then it just gets worse and worse from that, to the point of where they're closing in on their... The camera is closing in on their bottoms, and they're shaking it, and
right.
It's just ridiculous.
What I noticed wasn't their bottoms, but Derek Smalls is playing a two-headed bass.
Yes.
Which is, like I'll refer to the Led Zeppelin concert film, and so Jimmy mm-hmm. Page had a two-headed guitar, so he could play a 6-string and 12-string at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that looked cool, even though I don't play guitar and don't fully understand why you need it.
Right.
But I can't... Like, why do you need a two-headed bass other than it looks really, really cool?
A lot of this movie was inspired by the excesses of the progressive rock bands of the time, of the late 70s and early 80s, a la Yes and Styx, who would do crazy, almost, you know, what many people would think of as pointless things like that.
Prog rock bullshit.
Prog rock bullshit.
No, we just got the explicit tag. And then we cut back to Marty DeBerge going over some Spinal Tap album reviews, and they're all terrible.
Yeah.
And I don't know if like that's a counteract to like Rolling Stone dragged some Led Zeppelin albums through the mud.
Mm-hmm.
But
this is like scathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best one is your album Shark Sandwich. The review is just shit sandwich.
Intravenous to Milo.
The album art's great, especially for a one-off joke. And
yep.
Yeah, the album they're promoting this tour is called Smell the Glove.
Yes.
Which is just so provocative to be stupid.
The thing is, without the context of what we'll get into, of the whole album cover being deeply offensively sexist, but just the name by itself could mean several different things.
All bad.
All bad, yeah.
But yeah, the review Shark Sandwich, Shit Sandwich, reminded me of the shortest movie review ever. So Leonard Maltin has the record for the shortest movie review.
Uh-huh.
And so the movie is called Isn't It Romantic? And Leonard Maltin wrote was no. And that kind of like, well, I don't think I'm going to see that film. Yeah, I'm always a big believer in shorter is better in writing and comedy.
And this is a masterclass of less is more. I mean, the whole movie clocks in at under an hour and a half.
Right. It's nice and tight. There used to be bootleg VHS tapes that were like 2, 3, 4 hours. Almost 90 minutes of this dry satire. I'm starting to feel exhausted. You were talking about the cover of the album being problematic. So we find out at another party that the Boston gig has been canceled. And that's probably a bad sign when you're on tour. Their manager, Ian, said, oh, don't worry, it's not a big college town, but it's a big town.
The most incompetent, doofusy manager ever.
It's fine. He carries a cricket bat.
Right. It's true.
But then he and Fran Drescher's character, Bobby, get into a row about the album cover.
Yeah, because that was actually one of my favorite scenes watching it last night. And it was never a standout scene, but watching it last night, I was just absolutely cackling at Fran Drescher in this scene. The way that she describes the over-the-top offensive album cover. It's sexist.
Right, and just like someone else's vomit, it's funnier to have it described. This is funnier than if you just saw the picture of it.
Right.
And like Ian's defense, like, it's the 1980s.
Right. He's the most oblivious person.
Yes. Just trying to, like, he's like, can't do the album cover. It's sexist. And Nigel Tufnell, what's wrong with being sexy?
The way that she describes it with that voice of hers, and she's so animated and so passionate.
She nailed that scene. If that was improvised, that's amazing. I know with Christopher Guest movies, he just gives outlines and note cards. Mm-hmm. So the actors know the beats that they're trying to hit, and then all the details they get to fill in themselves.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of think it might have been because you can see her kind of like searching for those details as she's saying them.
So the next place they play is in North Carolina. Have you ever been to North Carolina?
I've driven through North Carolina.
It's some nice places. I've been there a few times. But yeah, they play the song Hellhole.
And it's funny, you know, as we're listing these songs, I'm noticing on the album, they're all mixed up. They're not in order. Because the Spinal Tap album, the soundtrack album, opens with Hellhole.
Right. Well, you don't want that album to open up with Tonight I'm Gonna Rock You Tonight, because then you just turn the album off.
That's true.
So I've seen the movie a lot, and I've actually listened to the soundtrack of my own free will quite a bit. And the only song that I remember and really sticks out is Tonight I'm Gonna Rock You Tonight, which is the second song.
Yeah. It's that riff is so catchy.
Yeah, no, they nailed that.
A lot of the songs are just more like mood pieces to conjure up, you know, okay, this is their death metal song and this is their sexy song, you know.
Right, because they're
this is their prog song.
Because despite being the new originals, they're anything but. They're always...
Right. Oh, they're super derivative. Yeah.
Like if Spinal Tap came out in the 90s, this would be a grungy Nirvana band.
Right.
Yeah, the Hellhole's notable because... Nigel Tufnell tries to do that cool move where you lean backwards while playing the guitar, and then he gets stuck.
So the roadie has to come out. That poor roadie who's always getting the short end of the stick.
The roadies are, being a roadie for this band. Cut two, Nigel's ridiculous guitar collection. And before we get to the most famous scene, there's the... He holds up a guitar. Listen to the sound. And he's like, "Well, don't you have to play it? What if when you play it, it's a great sound."
If I was playing it, it would sound great.
And then there's a line I quote a lot. He points to the guitar with the tag still on it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "No, don't touch it. Don't point at it. Don't even look at it."
Right.
And I've done that with my bicycle before with my really nice bike.
Yeah.
When I've driven to it and people get too close. I'm like, "No, don't touch it. Like,
no, stay away.
Don't
stay
even look away. At it." But yeah, now we're at the most famous scene. It's been immortalized. This is the one gag everyone knows about.
Yep. But the amps that have a number 11 on them.
So is it louder? It's one louder. And then, yeah, just the back and forth with them. Why not make 10 louder? Well, these go to 11.
After the 15 seconds of pausing and pondering, chewing his gum. Well, these go to 11.
I've had conversations where people and I are not on the same page, and we just keep having 15-second pauses and then saying things like, "All right, we're I think we're talking about the same thing. But yeah, if you look at IMDb for the Spinal Tap page, the rating is out of 11.
Is it really?
Yes.
I'm on it right now. Let me see. Oh, yes, it is. Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad I'm not a liar.
No. Not, it's not they didn't believe you. It's like, that's brilliant.
I mean, that one joke has permeated pop culture. So yeah, and oh, I not to brag, but I've been walking a lot during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to go walking after this, but today will be 125 days of my step streak. And it, instead Very of, important. And I don't go to 10,000 steps, I go to 11,000.
And then,
oh, go ahead.
I'm just still thinking about like the way they just ended the scene and right after he makes that joke.
Well, how could you top it?
After that immortal scene,
There's another canceled gig due to a lack of advertising funds.
Yes.
Which I don't know if that's a real excuse or not.
I don't even know if that's a real thing. Like lack of wouldn't that be something they would have to consider before they even go on tour?
Or like visit the local radio station and.
Right. Like how much of your budget did you blow on advertising in the first leg of your tour? You know, like what did you take out billboards or.
Well, you do see him doing cocaine in the movie. And from what I hear, that's expensive habit.
Here, let me dip into the advertising budget to pay for this coke.
I was hoping you were going to dive into your history with spending money on cocaine. Be a rock, be a Movies at Rock exclusive.
Like my own personal experience? Yes. Oh, yes.
So David's girlfriend is going to meet with them in Milwaukee. And the girlfriend subplot was actually requested and added in from studio producers.
Oh, really?
Because they were concerned about the film just being completely plotless. Which there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I have no problem with that at all.
But just adding some conflict in there, and then some very obvious like Yoko Ono vibes and parody. Yeah. Well, there's that short scene in the hotel room where they get excited because the radio is playing the Tamesmen, their original band, and then it ends with they're Spinal Tap now, and they're in the Where Are They Now category. Yeah. that's got to really sting when you're doing an American tour and
they're known as has-beens.
Yeah.
And then soon more of your shows get canceled.
Yeah, it gets dark. There's a short scene where they visit Graceland.
Oh, yes. The Heartbreak Hotel rendition.
I wrote down a cappella Heartbreak Hotel, and it's pretty, like, it's lackluster on purpose.
So they did the song Heartbreak Hotel because it was the only Elvis song that they could get the rights to do. And it worked out perfect.
Is it cheaper than the other ones?
I guess. I think it was the only one that they like got clearance to use, like permission, like special permission to use it. And but it worked out perfectly because that song, it as far as melody goes, there's not a lot of melody there. I mean, I love that song. It's a great song. But it's not a song you can harmonize to. It's just it's like vamping, you know. Wilson's my baby. There's not much there.
Right.
To,
and then
musically.
I think David just, no, do the harmony.
Right. how do you you can't harmonize to that? It's blues, you know.
I don't know, I'm a terrible singer, so I could try.
You would still probably do a better job than they did in the movie.
We're not gonna do it here. So we talked about the Tamesmen. They changed their name to Spinal Tap in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
And so I keep referring to Spinal Tap, and when you read about them, they talk about Spinal Tap as a fictional band. Like, but they've released albums,
right? They've transcended this movie,
right? So, like, when do you stop being a fictional band after your second or third album?
How many albums do they have? They have three albums.
Three. Okay. I was going to save that for the end of the podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's fine. So Spinal, they were the Tamesmen, and then changed their name to Spinal Tap in 1967. Mm-hmm. And we see another great thing about this mockumentary is the way it cuts back to. Like old footage, like a regular documentary would, but they had to record that, obviously.
Uh huh. And make the film stock look old.
Right. And so like the amount of the work setting up a stage and costume and writing a song for a 15-second gag.
Right. That's a lot. That's a big commitment right there.
Right. And so it's Listen to the Flower People. Very 60s. I felt like I was watching Laugh-In. It was very 60 hippies, rock and roll. And then they talk about their third drummer who died.
Mm-hmm.
Exploded on stage. Just a puff of green. And then they try to like defend it. Like, well, there's lots of spontaneous combustion. You just don't hear about it. So Janine, David's girlfriend, arrives during the sound check for Give Me Some Money.
Mm-hmm.
And then this also is when we get to see the actual album for Smell the Glove, the compromise the manager met with the record company. And it's another
the Jet Black Mirror cover.
And it's a line I quoted before. It's so black. How much more black could this be? And the answer is none. And so at the brewery, we normally beer cans are silver, but for a special beer release, we got black matte cans. And so that looks really cool when you put a black label on it. And so that's the first thing I thought of when I saw them was I said that out loud. Like, how much more black could this can be? And the answer is none. None more black. And then
just like Smell the Glove. If the name of the beer is not Smell the Glove beer, I hope.
No, we're not.
No,
it's we're not terrible people, Josh.
Oh, good. Unlike me, apparently, because I came up with that.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Josh, are you familiar with the modern rock and roll band Metallica?
I sure am.
So Metallica released a near solid all black album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if in the Metallica documentary, they're at a benefit concert and they meet Spinal Tap.
Oh, wow.
And so the three stars of Spinal Tap like start mocking Metallica, saying, "What? Come on, guys, where'd you get the idea for a solid black album cover?" and they comedy bully Lars Ulrich and the gangs and get them to say, like, yeah, it was a tribute to Spinal Tap and Smell the Glove. Yeah, that footage is on YouTube if you want to look for that clip of Spinal Tap meeting Metallica.
That's amazing. I had no idea that happened.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen their documentary, yeah.
And yes, it's just Nigel Tufnell and David St. Hubbins just giving them a tough time for like, steal our ideas, huh?
Of all bands to lift from, you're going to lift from Spinal Tap.
I guess no one would expect it.
True. That's true. Especially from Metallica.
I'm not really a Metallica fan at all.
I'm not either. I'm just kind of thinking that just seems like something that they would do, sort of inadvertently steal from this mock.
Yeah, I doubt it was on purpose, but how do you be a modern rock and roll band and not know about Spinal Tap?
Oh, yeah. At least have heard of them, you know?
Nirvana refused to be in a rock documentary because they said there aren't any good ones except Spinal Tap.
Really?
Yeah. Dave Grohl said, yeah, the only good rock and roll movie is Spinal Tap.
That's great. He's not entirely wrong there.
So after that terrible album fiasco, we cut to another concert where they're all starting in pods, cocoons.
Another classic moment.
Right. This song is Rock and Roll Creation, and it's kind of this is their most prog rock song.
Definitely. It's very Rush like.
Right, because the end of the bit we see there's a lot more keyboards and some harmonies they're singing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, Derek Smalls is trapped in his pod. Like, they try plugging it, unplugging it in, hammering it.
Yep. And you could see him like trying to play the bass at the same time while trying to use his elbow and his shoulder to kind of lodge the pod open.
Right. It's not going well. It's definitely, no. They don't have money for advertising. They don't have, but they have money
they
for
have
all
pizza
these
pods.
They have all the, are they dragging all these ridiculous sets from show to show? So right. I guess like we're seeing the whole concert spread out. So before the pods had been working.
And another appearance by that poor roadie.
With a hammer.
Yeah. This'll work. Why don't I just smash it to pieces?
We get a nice one-on-one with Marty DeBurgi and the current Spinal Tap drummer in the bathtub. Which, like, if I'm being interviewed, I think the bathtub is the last place I choose.
Kind of contemplating his decision about joining the band.
Well, he's like, he's not afraid just because of the law of averages.
But Marty's kind of trying to discourage him from joining.
Don't he want to live?
It's a bizarre scene. Like, couldn't you have waited, 10 minutes till he was done taking his bath and then interview him?
Maybe he just doesn't get out of the bath. Then we get another scene of, we start to see kind of how wacko Janine is. Like, really into yoga and astrology and astrological charts. Comedy movies don't have bits that go on this long with this much silence.
That's
but
true.
But I don't think you can rush the joke.
Right.
And there was foreshadowing because there's been a lot of, like, up crotch scenes of them playing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he goes through the metal detector and it goes off.
Yeah, over and over again. He has to keep trying, and then he finally pulls out the tin foil with the cucumber.
Yeah. Oof. What?
Yeah, it does tease us a lot with, like you said, not only just the camera angles, but the really, really tight spandex pants they wear frequently.
As and is appropriate for the
everything.
Their, right.
Yep.
But he has a real funny response. She asks if he has any metal plates or fake limbs, and he goes, not particularly, which is not the correct response. I feel like that's a real yes or no question. And then the next song they play is Heavy Duty Rock and Roll. And that one was pretty unmemorable for me.
Yeah, same. That wasn't a standout.
It must be hard because if you write a bad song on purpose, what point are you writing it bad comedically and what point is it just a bad song?
Yeah.
It's a real fine line to walk.
And this, I think, kind of crossed over into the bad, just bad.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty generic and didn't stand out at all. So originally they had really sweet hotel rooms. There was that hotel where they had an issue because they, instead of getting 7 suites, they got one suite on the 7th floor.
Yeah.
So that hotel attendant with the crazy glasses was Ed Begley Jr.
Yes, yes.
He's been in other Christopher Guest bits. But now after Heavy Duty, they arrive at the Chicago Holiday Inn. And no discredit to the Holiday Inn, but it seems like as more gigs get canceled, the budget's getting tighter.
For sure. It's definitely, compared to what they were in before, it was definitely a downgrade.
But I'm not. I don't want to upset your sponsors. Yeah, I don't want to upset your sponsors, right. Josh. We love the Holiday Inn here at Movies That Rock.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, it's a huge upgrade for a band as high profile as Spinal Tap. It might be a different story.
Movies That Rock, brought to you by Holiday Inn.
Now, is this the I'm trying to remember the hotel where they were looking at those brochures, and there's that one little almost throwaway line.
Oh yeah, that's the one with Ed Begley Jr., the 7 suites.
Oh yes, yes, yes. Okay.
Go ahead. I know what you're gonna say, but go ahead. Yeah. Your throwaway line.
My favorite little throwaway line about what is miniature golf? Well, isn't it just it's golf, but the balls are smaller.
Yeah. What's the difference between golf and miniature golf?
Yeah.
But yeah, in Chicago, we meet their record representative, Artie. Played by an unrecognizable Paul Schaefer.
Yes. I did not know this was Paul Schaefer for the longest time.
Well, I'm not used to seeing Paul Schaefer with that much hair. Not that I'm trying to denigrate. I'm holding on to what hair I have.
it's unusual.
It is. And he plays it. He plays such a character. It's nothing like Paul Schaefer. But he's the record rep keeps saying hi, like he keeps introducing himself and saying his name with every person he shakes his hand, even though by the third person is like, yeah, we get it, you're Artie. But yeah, Artie set up an album autograph signing here in Chicago to promote Smell the Glove, and they mentioned that with the Solid Black album you don't even have the name on it.
They would have to put like a sticker on it on the like the cellophane,
right? Kind of like with Led Zeppelin 4, there's no,
yes,
it just says Zoso,
which is meaningless if you don't know anything about it, you know?
Right, and lets you be really pretentious if you do know about it, which I was known to do in high school. But yeah, no one shows up to the signing. It's like if a tumbleweed had went through, it would have been appropriate. And then Paul Schaefer's kind of overacting. He's like, go ahead, kick my ass. And he just bends over.
He bends over.
Kick on it. I'm begging you.
And this, this scene, I was a little bit distracted by the albums that were on the shelf that he was bending over with.
Really? What were they?
It's a really good album. It's an album I like a lot. And I think it has one of the worst album covers of all time, like almost Spinal Tap level. And it's Fleetwood Mac's Heroes Are Hard to Find album.
Yeah. Well, Fleetwood Mac isn't really known for their great album art.
No, but this one is like extra. This one has, if anybody hasn't seen it, this is a pre-Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham Fleetwood Mac album.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a Bob Welch era. So I think it's like 73, 74 it came out. And it has Mick Fleetwood in a pair of briefs with his daughter, who has no clothes on, standing on his feet. And he's like sticking, like he looks emaciated and he's like sticking his bones out. And she's looking up at him. It's just so bafflingly weird and hideous and awful. I don't know who decided that would be a good idea to put on the cover of this album. Like, clearly nobody was going to buy an album cover that looked like that.
Yeah, I'm not really. I don't even know what that music's going to be like looking at that album cover.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if anybody's listening is looking, either knows the cover or is Google imaging the cover now. It's really awful.
Well, if anyone's listening and that's their favorite album of all time.
Hey, look, I actually like that album. The songs are really good, but that cover, man. And it struck me because I'm like, that is a perfect album choice to put in this movie in just since like a background shout out, you know, because it's so bad. It like easily fits in with something like Intravenous to Milo.
It fits in with like how
Smell the Glove
fits in with how what a bad record store it is. They can't get anyone to come get their album signed. And this was probably how would you sign it? Because this is before the Silver Sharpie era.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess
just like a flare pen or something.
Or yeah, people could bring in their older Spinal Tap albums.
Yeah, there you go.
Get those signed, and then
maybe they could bring in their new originals albums.
Bring their Polaroid camera and get a photo with the band.
Yep, absolutely.
I liked how every band member had their own cardboard cutout in the record store.
Yeah, to give the illusion that there were people there.
The next scene is one that really resonates with musicians. The getting lost in theaters and walking around in circles.
Yes.
They're just walking around shouting, "Hello, Cleveland," and "Rock and roll." And they're walking around forever trying to find the stage. And they keep bumping into the same technician or maintenance man in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives the most complicated directions.
Right.
Like I was listening and I don't think I would find my way out just following these directions. No. I need to write them down.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Just give me a roadmap or something.
But yeah, I remember seeing a VH1 special about Spinal Tap and just musicians finding that very relatable because you go to these old theaters that have been renovated so many times. And
it's like a labyrinth trying to find your way out.
Right, because backstage isn't very nice. It's solid brick wall and just basic lights, no landmarks. That one sticks out to me because just the "Hello, Cleveland." And I'm not even sure they're in Cleveland anymore. And that's a good way to win over a crowd is shouting the wrong name.
Yes. That I'm sure that has been done before.
It happened. I went to a concert here. I don't remember the guy. He was because currently I'm in Iowa and he was talking about, come on. Yeah, let's go Buckeyes. And the whole crowd was confused because the Buckeyes are the Ohio State.
Right.
It's like, oh, no. Yeah. Hawkeyes. What's a Hawkeye? That's weird, man.
Just trying to play it off.
Yeah, it's just like, shut up and play the keyboard. The next scene's in a diner, and they're talking about Janine, the girlfriend, is saying the album was mixed wrong, which is a bold statement.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I could say that about, I don't know enough about album mixing.
Yeah, like production and stuff like that.
Right. She provides some new art designs that are pretty out of this world. And then Nigel Designs says we should, you know what, we need to bring some classic songs onto the set list.
Yes.
Stonehenge. And he designs it on a napkin. And then this was
another iconic part.
Yes, this is a reference to real life. I think it was Black Sabbath or Dio.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was their set was too big because they wrote down feet and then it got made in meters. So like what was designed for them was way too giant.
Lost in translation.
Right. I was thinking that because he wrote 18 on the napkin and an 18 foot thing seems too big for the stages they're playing.
But 18 inches is nothing. It's what we get.
Right. But in between that, we see Nigel saying his solos are his trademark.
Oh, yes.
And we get weird noodling from him. So he's like playing a second guitar with his foot.
Right.
And the part where I almost laughed out loud was when he's banging a violin against his guitar. Well, have you seen the Led Zeppelin concert footage DVDs from the 70s?
Yes. Yeah, I did do The Song Remains the Same. Yeah.
But no, this is different. No, this movie came out in the 2000s, and it's just like five different Led Zeppelin concerts.
Oh, no, that I have not seen.
I lent this two-disc DVD set to a coworker, and I never got it back.
Oh man.
But in one of the concerts from the 70s, Jimmy Page starts doing a long guitar solo and he's playing his guitar with a violin bow.
Yes.
And so it is kind of pretentious and it goes on for a while, but it sounds crazy. I've never heard a guitar like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a technique that's been kind of lifted by a few other bands since then, and it's just they kind of originated that.
So I feel like that was a direct Jimmy Page parody, where he's just like rubbing the violin on the guitar.
Right. But rather than using a bow, it's just the whole violin,
which is weird, like rubbing a keyboard on your piano. So the Stonehenge bit, what do you think is funnier? So the way they do it in the movie, they discuss how, like, the woman who built the Stonehenge shows it to Ian, the manager, and he goes, "This is great. Will the actual one be like have these contours?" And she's like, "No, this is it." And then it falls down on stage. Would it have been funnier to just have it come down on stage small? Because I don't.
Yeah.
I feel like it ruins the momentum of the joke.
I see where you're coming from. Yeah, I think I agree with you.
And then
I feel like they should have just let it drop. You
just
know?
Let it drop and then have it play out afterwards.
Right.
Because like we see the joke we get is the band's reaction to the tiny Stonehenge, and in the credits they're listed as little druids.
Yes.
Dancing around Stonehenge.
Little elves. Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like the discussion with the napkin and the model Stonehenge kind of steals the thunder from that scene.
It's too much, a little too much exposition and setup.
Yeah, it would have been just funnier to have Stonehenge fall from the rafters. And then we see the napkin saying 18 inches, not 18 feet. And...
Right.
Yeah, for this song, though, I really like the song. Did you like it?
Yeah, I did.
I think it's the second best song so far on the soundtrack.
Yeah, and it's very much, again, in the tradition of, like, you know, concept rock, you know, like what Styx were doing and that sort of thing. Very, you know, similar. Also like Rush,
Floyd-esque.
Yeah, very much so. Although a little bit more deliberately pretentious.
Right. So after this, Ian and the band get into quite a fight.
Yeah.
And
go ahead.
No, yeah, this is what you were alluding to earlier.
Yes. Where he suggests that he gets an assistant. And so he kind of puts Janine up to the task. And Ian is terribly offended by the notion of, first of all, having an assistant at all, because he doesn't, you know, he's oblivious to how incompetent he is. But also the fact that he would have to, you know, work with a girl is just beyond what he can comprehend.
Work with a woman, Josh.
Right.
It's 2020.
So he quits, he storms out, and the tour continues to crash and burn.
Right, because they try and record some more music, and Nigel and David are starting to argue. Nigel accuses David of being unable to concentrate. And then Marty DeBerge interviews Derek, and he hasn't really gotten a lot of one-on-one time.
No, he really hasn't. He was...
Harry Shearer's a funny guy, but he's really more in the background in this film.
He is. They kind of use him for, it seems like, a lot more of like the sight gags, like the physical comedy.
And he's very good at that, his facial reactions.
Yeah. And the reactions, and also, you know, too, like with the whole falling back and not being able to get up, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was nice to get a scene of him with just him and some chance for him to flex his improv muscles.
Right, and he talks about how there's two visionaries in the band, which goes back to like how there's two lead guitarists in the band.
Yes.
Which is just asking for fights to start.
Right.
And he compares them to fire and ice, and he's just there to like to balance it out. So you know where the next concert gig is, right?
Yes, it is at the Air Force Base.
And it's one of my comedic heroes, Fred Willard. Fred Willard's always great in brief moments, but I consider him a comedy hero. He's definitely someone like when I try and be funny, like I want to be like Fred. I've heard him described as people don't know if he's like, is Fred Willard doing a bit or is that just him?
But that's how good he is, though.
I know.
That's how funny he is. Yeah.
Right. And that's how I want to live my life. And he's so good at it. Like,
yeah.
Like people might think I'm in the band. My hair is getting a little shaggy too. And he's speaking so fast, like the other people don't have time to interject.
The reaction that he gives when he notices that his joke like is completely unfunny, that he just kind of it blows it off, and then he just keeps going. And
he doesn't stop.
Right,
He's like, I want Spinal Tap.
That's
it. And he's like, hey, yeah, we're all big fans of your music. I'm not speaking personally, but I do like the whole rock and roll movement. And he asks them to play some slow songs so he can dance. Yeah, Fred Willard's just a whirlwind, and kind of I started to feel the film dragging a little, and then just Fred Willard perked me right up. But yeah, instead of playing some slow songs, they play Sex Farm. Definitely the wrong vibe. You get nice awkward shots of like the crowd doing prom style dancing to Sex Farm. But then Nigel starts having some trouble with his equipment, like the radios are coming into his wireless guitar. And so he throws...
And the disaster just becomes out of control.
Right. He's finally fed up and he throws the guitar down and storms off.
Yeah.
So like Nigel...
What seems like the end of Spinal Tap.
Right, because one of their two lead guitarists quit mid-tour. It's amazing they had a documentary crew for that.
So then they go... Then they play at an amusement park.
Yeah, and it's an amphitheater, and they're going through the set list trying to figure out what songs they can play without Nigel.
Yeah.
And it's not a lot.
No.
And it's so the crowd of less than 50 people, they try some jazz noodling. Yeah, this is definitely bad music on purpose. End of tour party in LA. So Nigel or Derek and David are talking about what they should do once they go back to England. David was mentioning just doing like an album of acoustic songs, and they talk about they always want to do that musical Saucy Jack about Jack the Ripper. Which like, and that's another good Spinal Tap joke where too much info would be bad.
So they decide instead, and I mean, Nigel ends up coming back to tell them about Japan. Should tour Japan.
Yeah, that's another joke with rock bands is like we're big in Japan, or they go to Japan for a tour to like give other places a break.
Right, right.
Are you a big fan of Devo, Josh?
Yeah, I like Devo.
Yeah, I do too. We're all from the same area. So there's a concert DVD of Devo in Japan from the 2000s or 2010s. So it's like when they're older and sold out.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not classic Devo. It's old man Devo, and they talk a lot about how, yeah, when we were touring younger, we'd stay up late and do drugs and have sex. Now we're old and we go to bed early. But yeah, it's a great high-energy tour, Devo live in Japan. But yeah, so Nigel says Ian wants to get the whole band back together for a Japan tour.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to play Tonight, Gonna Rock You Tonight, but without Nigel's guitar.
It just doesn't work.
No, it's just kind of, it's lame.
Yeah.
Like David St. Albans is like, come on, get on stage.
Yeah.
And there's a big, and
you can see that Nigel, like with every fiber of his being, really wants to.
Oh, yeah. He's singing along.
His pride
on the
is
side
getting in the way.
Right.
Yep.
But they've been friends since childhood. So they're able to bury their differences. And he gets a sweet rock and roll intro. Ladies and gentlemen, Nigel Tufnel. And then, yeah, he just wails on that riff. And props to Christopher Guest for being so good. And then the drummer combusts right at this concert.
Yes.
Two of their drummers have combusted spontaneously. And they have a completely different drummer for Japan. And then there's some comedy. So it ends with them in Japan with a much bigger crowd than they ever had in the States. Mm-hmm. And then the credits roll. And some of the best jokes are over the credits, or at least some of the most memorable ones.
And that's kind of a Christopher Guest trademark as well, because a few of his movies, some of the biggest corkers are in the ending credit sequence.
Yeah, I feel like the three editors realized like these are some really funny gags and bits, but they just don't really fit with the flow of the movie.
Yeah.
They're definitely more one-off. So the one that I remember from childhood most of all was like the ribs shirt. Like, these are my actual ribs.
Speaking of work, I actually pulled that joke off at work because I do have a glow-in-the-dark skeleton shirt they wear for Halloween. And so I was actually telling kids that, this is exactly what my spine looks like. Or I'm not my spine. This is exactly what my rib cage looks like. And they just made a shirt on it. And of course, they're literally like, really? Wow, that's so cool. And I totally went with it. It was fun.
Right. If you remove the flesh and blood, that's what it looks like. And then Marty DeBrugge's like, so your ribs are actually green?
But it's blue. But your veins are blue. But the blood is red. Yeah, but he's just not getting it
right. And then Saint Hubbins being an unusual saint, the patron saint of quality footwear.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of saints. I mean, I bet there's a footwear saint.
There's got to be.
They talk. Marty DeBrugge talks about how their audiences are mostly white and asks, "Is their music racist?"
Yeah.
And then Nigel and David go, no, we say love your brother. Well, we don't actually say it. We mean it. I like the idea of Rob Reiner just like throwing that on the gauntlet. try and be funny with this question.
And then they're like, what would you do if you weren't in music bit?
Oh, yes, yes. Everyone has a Derek Smalls. I only remember Derek Smalls. He says work with children, which sounds terrifying.
Yeah, from him especially.
Yes.
He's such an awkward person to begin with.
Yes, I didn't mean to say working with children is terrifying in general.
Well, no, like him in particular.
Yes, he would be a terrible choice.
Yes. And then that last line that Christopher guessed, the answer that he has that Nigel gives, where he says it depends on the hours. It started the trend of movies that have, like, you know, you need to stay for the ending credits, you know, because so many movies do that now where you have to stay and watch the ending credits because either they have gags during the credits or when it's all done, they have like a little segment afterwards that you only see if you stay for if you wait it out.
Yeah. Well, same era. Jackie Chan always had bloopers in his credits.
Yeah, that's true.
All through the 80s before he went Hollywood.
It did become a tradition for Christopher Guest as well to do that. Like Waiting for Guffman, I think also some of the best lines are right at the end.
I do love Waiting for Guffman.
Oh, me too. It's one of my favorites. That one might be my favorite of all the Christopher Guest movies.
I think my favorite is Best in Show.
Yeah, that one is a very close second.
Right, Guffman is my second.
And then Best in Show, it was kind of a funny story because I knew nothing about Christopher Guest, nothing about any of these movies. I think I was like 14 or 15 when Best in Show came out, and it was playing in the theater. And I went with my parents to go see it because they, you know, like, oh, this, it looks like this funny, cute dog movie, whatever. We didn't really know what we were getting ourselves into. We were the only people in the theater. The movie started. We didn't know it was a mockumentary, and we died. It was like, what the hell is going on? What is this movie? We're the only ones here. It was such a great, funny, memorable experience. And that was the first time you knew anything about Christopher Guest, and talk about like a baptism by fire.
Right.
It was amazing.
And so the whole reason we're doing Spinal Tap this time is because we were going to do A Mighty Wind, a spiritual sequel to Spinal Tap.
Yes. Yes. And it was also a really good movie. It's probably not top tier Christopher Guest, but it's still excellent.
It's still up there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. And with also some like genuinely wonderful music.
Yeah. Right. Speaking of songs, so they released an album to go with this movie in 1984. So, and that album is just called This Is Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
But they released two more albums afterwards.
Yeah, which is, and quite a while after too. It wasn't just like, you know, we're gonna ride the wave of success of Spinal Tap.
No, they're like, let's let the joke die down. And they actually have a lot of guest stars on This Is Spinal Tap.
Yes.
So Jeff Beck plays on Break Like the Wind.
Mm-hmm. It's just their second album.
On the first album. The first album doesn't have the guests. The guest stars are on the second one. So yeah, their first album came out in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And then their second album, Break Like the Wind, which is kind of a foreshadowing to Mighty Wind.
Yes. And also a reference to Christopher Cross, Ride Like the Wind.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that came out in 1992. So I was alive when that one came out.
Yeah.
And Break Like the Wind had a lot of guest stars. So the waiting a decade was probably good to let them get people on board.
Mm-hmm.
So people like Jeff Beck, Steve Lukather, Joe Satriani played on this.
Insane.
I know.
Slash
and Jeff Beck playing on the same goofy song. And Joe Satriani's on Break Like the Wind.
Right.
A favorite of mine, Dweezil Zappa, plays on one of the songs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Cher does a lead vocal on one of the songs.
Right. My favorite song from this album is The Majesty of Rock. And that has that has a fun, goofy music video.
Oh, okay.
It's hard to find. It used to be not on YouTube for a while.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
I had to go to one of those weird sites like Vimeo.
Okay. Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I haven't heard any of these albums.
Really?
Yeah.
So I listened when I was in my classic rock phase. I had This is Spinal Tap and Break Like the Wind in rotation.
Nice.
Like I was listening to the Spinal Tap albums unironically.
That's fantastic. I mean, hey, they're talented musicians. It's hard to.
And if all you want is like goofy 80s rock.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of which, we should have probably also mentioned that there are also two completely useless umlauts over the, there's an umlaut over the letter N for no reason whatsoever.
Outside of
just stylizing.
Did you feel the need to bring this up as an educator?
Well, no, I felt the need to bring it up because so many bands, like, you know, I think of a band like Motorhead that just kind of throws in umlauts for no reason.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love Motorhead.
Oh, I do too. It's just, it's kind of, it's them poking fun at that whole thing. You know, Husker Du do it too.
Right. Yeah. The umlaut's over a consonant, not a vowel.
Right.
How would you enunciate an N differently?
Weird.
They released a third album in 2009 that I haven't listened to.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen some videos of it because in 2009, Christopher Guest, Michael McKean, and Harry Shearer went on a tour. The Unwigged, Unwigged and Unplugged live concert.
No kidding.
And so they played Spinal Tap songs. They played songs from Mighty Wind. So they do a really great acoustic version of the Never Did No Wandering there.
That's awesome.
It's a hard to find movie.
Hmm.
I can't find it to stream anywhere, and I can only find the DVD used for somewhere between $60 to $100.
Ooh, yeah.
And as funny as I'm sure as it is,
right? It's not worth that much.
Like if it was like I could get the $4.99 you did for Spinal Tap, I'm down.
Yeah. I really lucked out. I was just thinking I was gonna rent it, but I was like, oh, for a dollar more, I could own it.
Yeah, and just I'd love to see this concert of them just playing the songs acoustically, having a good time. I'm sure like there's some great comedic banter up there.
Oh, I'm sure. It must have been incredible.
But it's hard to... I've never paid over $60 for one DVD.
But yeah, it's funny. Even Break Like the Wind. Even their third album, Back from the Dead, it's called, has some pretty wild guest appearances on it. Like Keith Emerson is on it. Steve Vai, John Mayer all play on that album. Pretty incredible.
Right. And an exclusive track on that one is a song called Saucy Jack. Listeners, do you have a copy of Unwigged and Unplugged, the live concert DVD? If so, write in to Movies That Rock, the email.
Yes, please hit us up if you have any access to this movie. I know we're both I'm very interested in seeing it. I know you are too.
I would too. We'd set up one of those fancy Zoom watching parties. Any final thoughts on Spinal Tap? I guess it's a comedy. Because
I definitely think it's a comedy. I think it's comedic perfection. This is
right.
This is the kind of humor that really appeals to me. The droll, ironic, dry humor.
Yeah,
is really the kind that gets under my skin.
I've been called dry quite a bit, but yeah. And reviews at the time, people didn't realize it was a fake band. They nailed it so well. Yeah. I mean, it was added to the National Film Registry in 2002.
Yeah,
It's such a cult following, I think, because so many musicians love it and identify with it.
Definitely. And even I think general audiences, too, I think, have an appreciation for that. Because, I mean, rock and roll is such a huge cultural thing that, and you know, people love going to concerts and stuff like that. So they like to see. So I think it appeals to that group as well. You know, that's why it has such a broader appeal.
Right. And it actually looks like a documentary, I think. Some of the mockumentary TV shows, they feel and look like one camera sitcoms.
Yeah.
I don't know where you want to drop this in. The cinematographer mm-hmm. was Peter Smokler, and mm-hmm. he's a veteran documentary cameraman.
No kidding, really?
Right. And so Reiner did a great job of picking the right cinematographer because I don't mm-hmm. think the movie would work if it was shot like a movie.
Right.
Because you have that veteran documentary cameraman knowing how to set up shots, where to go, how to frame it,
mm-hmm.
and frame it like a behind the scenes footage and concert footage.
Yeah.
Imagine how cheesy the film would have been with a bad cameraman.
Yeah, like you said, that wouldn't have worked at all. It would have come off as very lame. And that whole aesthetic that they nail of documentaries, it really is what makes this makes it even more dry and right. makes it even more fantastic.
And I think that continued. That's what makes a Christopher Guest film stand out as a Christopher Guest film.
Yeah, it's its realism.
Right.
And that attention to detail.
Yeah, they all have that kind of similar cinematography look of of the documentary. And does Marty DeBerge like predate modern documentaries where the director is the star of the documentary?
Oh, he might. Yeah, because that kind of didn't become a thing until like Michael Moore.
The Michael Moore, the Super Size Me era.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Morgan Spurlock.
That's it. Yes.
Fake name.
Right.
Marty, because one of the special features on the DVD is an older Rob Reiner as an older Marty DeBerge talking about I wanted to be a star of the show and like try and live that rock and roll lifestyle a little too. And I think satirizing modern documentaries of. and he's wearing the same.
Where are they now?
And he's wearing the same hat that he wore in the movie and that appears in Princess Bride.
Oh, he has it on.
He has it on as the older Marty DeBerge.
That's great.
Special bit.
That's great.
It's great because Marty DeBerge is just kind of a failed director wrote for this, and like the band Spinal Tap hates him for making them look bad.
Not that it required much work.
No, yeah. If you can find the DVD, if you can find the Criterion one, good luck. Yeah, the early 2000 special edition has some nice funny bits, and the commentary is actually by Derek Smalls, Nigel Tufnell, and David St. Hubbins.
Oh, is it really? Oh my god, that's got to be amazing.
It's almost funnier than the movie because they stay in character for the whole film, the whole commentary track, doing the ridiculous accents. Yeah,
I definitely need to hear that.
Yeah, I don't know. See. I don't know. Is this a commentary track on your digital copy?
No.
Mm-mm. Man, that's a drag.
It's a bummer. I know. That's why it was so cheap.
Check your local library for a Spinal Tap DVD.
Yeah. Talk about supporting businesses that need you right now. Holy moly.
Yeah. One of the places I miss the most is our local library, and they've done a great job of being able to get me books and DVDs safely.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's one thing I got to say. I really miss mine too, but I haven't really been using their resources that much. I guess just too because I have this thing about, you know, like so many people have been touching them and that kind of thing. And I'm sure they sterilize it and stuff. But
our library does a great job. So they got rid of late fees. And there's you return an item, it is isolated for 72 hours.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah. So if I return an item, it doesn't get checked in again for 3 days. And then, so I feel perfectly fine getting the material.
That's fantastic.
And and if you're unwell and you don't feel safe traveling, they'll mail it to you.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. They're going above and beyond. And so, cause I feel healthy and I'm traveling for work anyway, I'll stop at the library and get my few things and go on.
Bravo. That's shout out to that library. That's really,
Iowa City Public Library doing a great job.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Our libraries are so important. They really are.
Yeah. I've always loved libraries ever since I was a kid.
Yeah, me too. It was kind of like in college, you know, it was like my safe haven. And like you said, when you're young, it was almost magical, you know, going and finding what new books were out and everything. And
yeah,
so much there for nothing, you know.
Right. I developed such eclectic music tastes because the libraries I grew up in had huge CD collections. And so I could like go into deep dives of classic rock and the blues.
Yeah. Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I miss it so much.
Yeah, I miss that the most, of just wandering through the library and discovering books.
Mm-hmm. And even just any kind of media, like you said, like the downtown Buffalo City Library is just, it's incredible. And I haven't been inside it in over a year, and I miss it so much. Yeah. But anyway, our library nostalgia trip on Movies That Rock.
Well, I hope this episode went to 11.
I hope it did too. I think it did. So thank you so much for finally recommending that I cover this movie.
I'm glad I could bully you into it.
Yes, thank you for bullying me into it. And thank you for being the one to do it, because I'm really happy that I was able to cover this movie with somebody who knows it so well and is such a big fan and a funny person themselves who's been inspired by this movie and the cast in it. So,
and I think you have to close out with tonight. I'm going to rock you tonight.
I plan to. That's going to be my play out.
Has to be.
And hopefully I won't be sued for using it.
I don't think so.
Nah, probably not. I'm sure Rob Reiner is not a subscriber to Movies That Rock. And if he is, please leave a review.
Please leave a review, Rob.
Yeah.
Mr. Reiner, excuse me.
Right, that's right. Mr. Reiner to you. Berkey, where can we find you in the social media world?
This happened last time. What's my Twitter handle, Josh?
All right, I will go on Twitter now.
Let's see, here I am. I'm on Twitter at MR_Berkey.
There you go.
I'm also on Strava, if you are also into cycling.
I am. I always, Strava is one of those things I've always considered doing, and then I just kind of forget about it. I should probably get into that.
It's fun. I'm almost at 5,000 miles for the year.
Wow. Amazing.
So yeah, follow me on Twitter at MR_Berkey. Similar name for Instagram. That's where I post all my cooking and bread pics.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, you've got some like major food porn going on. It's awesome.
I just call it dinner.
Yeah. One man's dinner is another man's porn.
Yep.
What a note to end on.
Thanks, Josh.
Oh, hey, no problem.
Well, tonight, I hope tonight we rocked you tonight.
Yes, I hope so too. So again, like we drilled in your heads, please leave a review, good or bad. The algorithms help. You can email me at movies@rockpod@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at rockmoviespod, or if you feel like following me on my personal website, on my personal Twitter handle, it's at joshf618. So I'm around. Please reach out. A lot of you have reached out but haven't left reviews, so please fix that. So get on that. I'm watching. We're watching.
I'm not watching.
No, you're not. You're watching when we're recording is when we think about it. After that, no. So thank you so much again for taking the time to do this. This was super fun.
My pleasure. Good night, everyone.
Good night, podcasting world. And good night, Berkey. Thanks so much again.